Next week, Tuesday, January 16th, voters in Western Wisconsin's 10th State Senate District will go to the polls to select their next state senator. For 17 years, Republican Sheila Harsdorf held the seat and easily won re-election. But in November, Governor Scott Walker appointed Harsdorf to lead the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Now, for the first time in nearly two decades, the 10th Senate is wide open. For reference, the 10th Senate District includes most of St. Croix and Polk counties, along with parts of Burnett, Dunn, and Pierce counties. Some of the larger municipalities include Menominee, River Falls, Hudson, New Richmond, Osceola, and St. Croix Falls. Today on the West Side, we're featuring the finalists in the race. There are three candidates, two of them winners of the respective primaries, and another, a third-party candidate. This hour will feature a discussion with the candidates and give our listeners a chance to ask them direct questions. This is the West Side. First off, if you're listening to this program and have a question for our candidates, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page if you can't get through. We have full phone lines right now. We'll begin working through the calls in just a bit. I'd like to introduce the candidates. Joining me in studio is Brian Correa. He is a libertarian from Wilson. Brian Correa, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Adam Jarko joins us by phone. He is a Republican assemblyman for the 28th Assembly District. He lives in Balsam Lake. Adam Jarko, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Patty Schachner is a Democrat and medical examiner for St. Croix County. She lives in Somerset. Patty Schachner, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And again, if you listeners have any questions, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. The basic question that I always ask at the beginning of any of these forums is, why do you think your voter's best choice? In this case, the voters have had a lot of choices after 17 years of representation by a single person. So let me start with Brian Correa in alphabetical order, going by the last name. Why do you think you're the right choice to why do you think you're the right fresh face after 17 years of the seat being held by one person?
Well, I think you answered that in your question. It's a fresh face. I think we look back to 2013 through today, you're seeing a real desire amongst voters to say, I want fresh representation. I want something different than what we've gotten from the two-party paradigm that we've been stuck in for decades. So with a long-term senator leaving the district and voters having an opportunity to put somebody new in the seat, my campaign represents kind of a free pass. When we look at a lot of fear-based voting in regards to we don't want to lose a majority in the Senate or we don't want this piece of legislation threatened, none of that's the case in this race. You know, at the end of this race, the Republicans are still going to hold a majority. The Democrats will still be a minority. So we're not looking at shifting power in the Senate. So it's kind of a free pass for those fear-based voters to say, you know what, this is a great opportunity for me to go out and vote for a third-party candidate so I can hear a fresh voice and different solutions to some of the problems we're facing.
Very interesting. Adam Jarko, why are you the fresh face, even though you've been in the Assembly now since 2014? Why are you the right choice to lead the 10th Senate?
I think what people are looking for from anybody who runs for political office nowadays is somebody who's going to get something done. I think if you look at what's been happening in Washington, D.C., and why people are so frustrated with Washington, is because they seem to have an inability to get things done. They run on issues and get elected, and then time and time again, we're frustrated that we're not getting things done. I think just the opposite is true in Wisconsin. Over the last 7 years, we have done an incredible amount of work, and I've been so proud to be a part of that work and to be a leader on some really important pieces of legislation. I've shown my ability to get things done that protect property owners, protect hunters, protect gun owners, streamline regulations, rein in bureaucrats. And what we've seen because of the legislation that I've had an opportunity to lead on or support is a huge change in Wisconsin for the better. When Governor Doyle left office, we had unemployment hovering around 9%. It's down to a historic low of just over 3%. We have more people working in Wisconsin now than ever before. Wages are rising at about 7%. That is a huge increase in wages that we're starting to see. Our budget is balanced. You see, we're one of the only states in the country with a fully funded pension. I mean, Wisconsin is, in some respects, the very opposite of Washington, D.C. We are moving forward. We continue to get things done every single day for the people of northwestern Wisconsin, all across Wisconsin, really. And I've been proud to be a part of it in the Assembly, and I think in the Senate it gives me just that much more opportunity to continue working to move Wisconsin in the right direction so our kids and our grandkids have the opportunities to grow up in a great state with a great education system, great job opportunities, so they can stay here, work here, live here, and play here. And I'm really, really excited about this opportunity.
Thank you for that, Representative Jarko. Patty Schachner, your turn. Why do you think you are the correct person to lead the 10th Senate District and replace longtime Senator Sheila Harsdorf?
I think the reason that I am the best choice is because I am in the ditches with the people of District 10. My career in public service has allowed me the privilege of working with people at some of the hardest times of their lives, and it does not matter what party affiliation. And because of that, my work, not only as an investigator, but also as a board member on a food pantry, as a board member on the Domestic Violence and Sexual Violence Board, on the school board, as a co-founder of a suicide prevention task force of St. Croix County, I believe I am the person that has my fingers on the pulse of really what's going on in our county and in District 10. And because of the different skill set that I bring to the table, I will always ask, why do you feel that way? I always will ask, how are we going to fix it? And followed by, what are you willing to give up to fix it? So long, everybody feels, for so long, everybody has this split. And we do have a split. And it's not really reasonable to look and pretend that we don't. There are a lot of people who feel that their voices have not been heard. And my work experience, I listen to everybody and then figure out what the solutions are.
And before we go to the calls, I wanted to ask each of you, there's been a lot of attention recently to some of the trends in national politics in terms of elections. National pundits are wondering aloud if this year is shaping up to be a wave of sorts for Democrats. This comes after an unlikely Democratic victory in the recent Alabama Senate race. A lot of extenuating circumstances there. And other pickups in places like Virginia. So, Patty Schachner, I'll start with you. Do you think that this race for the 10th Senate District may be affected by those forces? And should it be watched as kind of a barometer for what could come in November?
No, I don't. I believe that each district, matter whether it's a school district, Senate district, Assembly district, or governor's race, whatever, we're each unique in what we do and what we bring to the table. And the whole process of democracy is not based on trends. It's really based on the message. We all are reaching out to people, and we're all trying to get that same sweet spot in votes to win. So I don't believe that to put too much credence in what the national trends are. I'm just focused on what's going on locally.
Adam Jarko, your thoughts?
Yeah, I largely agree. I think that if we've learned anything about Wisconsin voters over the last few years, particularly during the early part of the Walker administration, during Sheila Harsdorf's recall and Governor Walker's recall, that Wisconsin voters are pretty discerning. They pay attention to what's going on in their community, in their assembly district, in their Senate district. They're not overly persuaded with what the national pundits are saying, what's going on with the national politics. We've seen across the state where members of the assembly or Senate have been elected, even though they're from a different party than the presidential candidate who won or the U.S. Senate candidate. So I think, by and large, Wisconsin voters look at the district, look at the needs of their communities, and look at the candidates and make a decision based largely on that. And I suspect that's the way this election will go.
And Brian Correa, your thoughts on whether or not this might be a wave year for one of the political parties and your role in trying to either harness that or kind of work your way into the whole scenario.
I think if there's one effect that the national trends can have here locally, it's going to be in voter turnout. I think that you're going to see more people coming out to vote, and that's a good thing. I think the cause of it maybe is not necessarily great. I think there's a lot of dissatisfaction on both sides, between both parties and their voters when they look at the presidential election. I don't think anybody was incredibly excited about either of the candidates. I think there was a lot of lesser of two evils type voting going on in the last presidential election. I'm excited about that because I think that's going to make people look outside of the two major parties. I think it's going to – there's like I said, there's a hunger for a third party. A lot of Americans feel that way. Our state was a relatively strong state for Gary Johnson's presidential campaign, and our district was actually the strongest district in the state when it came to libertarian voting in that presidential election. So I'm very excited about the let's call it the stir that was caused by the last presidential campaign, and I think that we're going to have more voters engaged, and I think that's an excellent opportunity for third-party candidates.
With that, let's go to the phones. 1-800-228-5615 is the number if you've got a question or a comment for our candidates. The candidates are Brian Correa. He is a Libertarian from Wilson. Adam Jarko is a Republican Assemblyman from Balsam Lake. And Patty Schachner is a Democrat from Somerset. 1-800-228-5615. We go to John in East Farmington. You're on the air. John, what's on your mind? Did we lose you, John? All right. John, if you hear us, give us a call back. We might be having a phone problems. Stephen Webster, are you there?
I am.
All right, Steve, what's on your mind?
I had a chance to see the candidates at the League of Women Voters Forum last week. And my question is for Mr. Jarko, although the others can certainly answer too. He talked a lot about creating the conditions where small businesses can thrive, and I've heard him talk a lot about small businesses over the years, but I never hear him talk about working people, the people that actually work the jobs in those small businesses. And I'm not sure where the 7% figure came from, but here in the 10th Senate District, wages are stagnant. And a lot of people, I know people who are working two and three jobs just to make a go of it. So what I want to ask is, does he believe in the concept of a minimum wage, first of all? Secondly, would he consider a bill to raise the minimum wage? Because it's a proven fact that you can't raise a family. You can't even basically pay your own bills on $7.25 an hour. And what about a bill that would create a livable wage?
All right. Steve, thanks so much for those questions. Adam Jarko, he's positing those to you.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I talk so much about creating the conditions in our part of the state where small businesses can grow and thrive is because it is those small businesses that employ people in our area. That is the most important factor in this entire deal, because we can talk a lot about big companies, and I think I said it at the forum the other night, we'd all love it if a company like 3M would locate across the river and we could employ hundreds or thousands of people in one shot there, but that's pretty unlikely. The way that we grow our economy, our job base, our tax base, our wages is by small businesses. Those businesses, oftentimes, that start in somebody's garage or as a dream, and it's just them and maybe their spouse, and then they add an employee, and then two, and then five, and then 10, and maybe 100. And those are the businesses that employ the people here. Those are the businesses that provide health insurance for their employees, that provide the raises, the bonuses, all of those things that we think about as making for a good, strong community with great jobs. And so it is fighting for those small businesses that has kind of been the most important part of my role in the state assembly, and I would certainly carry that through to the state senate, because it is so important for the people in northwestern Wisconsin that we have small business growing and thriving in Wisconsin, and we do, and we see it, and we see the wage growth. And I disagree with the caller that we have stagnant wages in the 10th. Certainly there are some communities where that we have difficult issues, but if you look across the entirety of the 10th, particularly in St. Croix County and Southern Polk County, jobs and businesses are booming there. The thing that you hear the most from employers is that they can't find enough workers. Now, that doesn't cover Northern Polk County or Burnett County, and I am well aware of that. That is my assembly district, and we work really hard with that. I mean, we've done some really great economic development projects up in Burnett County over the last couple of years. The St. Croix Chippewa Tribe has been a tremendous facilitator of a lot of jobs that have been growing up there and a lot of other businesses. And so that is going to be my focus. And I think to the caller's specific question, advocating for a set wage rate that would rise actually has a minimum wage rate that the government would control and continue to press up. We've seen how that works in other states where they just go to automation. So we have to be really, really careful about simply saying, well, we're going to set, and I've heard some of my Democrat friends say $15 an hour as the minimum wage. I think what that would do to small businesses in northwestern Wisconsin would be a real problem, and we got to be very, very careful about going down that path. In fact, what I would like to continue to see is us creating an environment where jobs and wages can grow, and that's what we've been seeing in Wisconsin. That's what I'm going to keep working on.
And so same question to you. I'm going to focus on the minimum wage, livable wage. Brian Correa, do you think that it's the role of the government to set what the wage is should be, or do you think that should be free market?
Absolutely, that should be a free market decision. That's not the role of government. What we have to look at is what the role of government is doing to actually suppress wages. We've had Republican leadership in the state of Wisconsin now for 8 years. We're still in the bottom third in terms of tax climate. So when we talk about doing things in economic development, the best thing the government can do to increase wages and to raise the standard of living of the employees here in Senate District 10 and across the state is to create a climate where businesses are attracted to us, not because we're handing out sweetheart deals and doing economic development projects, but because we have a consistent low tax rate. The only way we can do that is by shrinking the size of government, of course. So when we look at 8 years of small government, in quotes, Republican control, we say, has government gotten any smaller? Has our tax burden gotten any lighter? The answer is no. And so when you look at stagnating wages, you can look directly to government interference in the market.
Patty Schachter, your thoughts on minimum wage, livable wage, for workers in Wisconsin?
Well, I think the thing that you need to look at is look at who you serve and what your competition is. And if you actually look at the ALIS, the Asset Limited Income Restrained Employed, in our area, it's pretty high. In St. Croix County, we actually have 7% of people in poverty, but 22% are income restrained. So then the question then becomes, what's the competition? And when you people in St. Croix County and Polk County can go across the river and hop onto Metro Transit and get a job that pays $5 to $6 more an hour, that's where they're going to go. So we have to look at our competition, because we in District 10 in the St. Croix Valley are going to be 100,000 employees short in just a few short years. And that's based on studies that have been done throughout the St. Croix River Valley. So wages are important, and right now in St. Croix County, for one person based just to live at the bare minimum, you would need to make $15.46 an hour. For a family of four, you would need to have a combined income of $32.29 an hour. So wages are important, and if our district wants to be competitive to a very vibrant, competitive workplace, which is in the Twin Cities area, our employers really need to look at what it is that they're going to do and what their choices are to entice employees to stay on this side of the river. So we have a very low unemployment rate, but it does cost to live in the District 10, no matter which part of the district you live in. So wages are going to be a big conversation, and automation and technology is a part of that, which means that you have to have more training. You have to have a skilled workplace worker, and there's a lot of pieces that come together here, and just focusing on a argument of not increasing the wage is really a safe way to have a conversation, but the reality is that we are in direct competition with the Twin Cities for wages, and we are going to have to, our business owners, our municipalities, everybody are going to have to look at quality jobs over quantity jobs, because our unemployment is really low and we need to meet the needs of our area.
If I could follow up, do you think that the state lawmakers should raise the minimum wage? I think it's $7.25 or something like that. Some in your party have called for $15 or $10.52. There's all kinds of numbers out there. So do you think the government should raise the minimum wage in Wisconsin?
I think the government does have a role. I don't know that raising the minimum wage in District 10, you can work in fast food and as a high schooler and make pretty good salary, but that doesn't mean it's a living wage. The question is not really what is the minimum wage, it's what is the living wage, and do our employers support living wages? And then you have to look at what it costs to live here. If our goal is to have people live here and have their families here, then a living wage is the conversation that our businesses need to have, and they are the ones that are in charge of what the salaries should be.
So the businesses should leave, the state should not?
The businesses should be leading this conversation. They're the ones that know what they can do. The businesses are the ones that have this that are really at task here. And if you're getting tax dollars to help you with your business, then the wage part should be a important part of that conversation. The wage in our area, our unemployment is so low that wages are an essential piece to this conversation. When you have this low of unemployment and such a need for employees to think that living wages and what it costs to live here is not going to be a part of the conversation is an argument without a solution. To me, it's like this is where we all need to come together and come up with a solution. District 10 is not like the rest of the state. We have access to world-class employment right across the river, and we have global companies in our area. So we have to really look at what our community is and what we're doing, and then we have to be competitive, because what we don't want is have a lot of people move here and work outside of our area. If they move here because it's to them what they have now, it's cheaper to live on our side of the river and work on their side of the river, then that's a decision maker that is not going to be helpful for us over here, because that means increased services. There's a lot of increases that go with the population increasing. We need smart growth, and we need smart wages, and we need livable wages over here that are competitive to the people in the environment and the businesses in the environment.
With that, let's take our first break here on the West Side. If you've got a question for our comments, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page if you can't get through. Otherwise, keep trying, 800-228-5615. Bernie and Osceola, we'll get right to your call. You've been on the phone for a while. I hope you stick with us. You're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're speaking with the three candidates vying to represent the 10th State Senate District of far western Wisconsin. We'll hear more from them when we return.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Medical Society, with nearly 12,500 physician members dedicated to advancing the health of Wisconsin citizens. More information at wisconsinmedicalsociety.org.
There's a ragtime and vintage jazz concert coming to the First Congregational UCC in Eau Claire Saturday, January 13th, beginning at 7 p.m. Here's some favorite Chippewa Valley Ragtime Society members perform historical American music. Proceeds will benefit the American Red Cross.
I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on Ideas 88.3 and 88.7. We're speaking this hour with the finalists running to represent the 10th State Senate District of St. Croix, Polk, Burnett, Dunn, and Pierce counties. The candidates are Brian Correa, he is a Libertarian from Wilson, Adam Jarko is a Republican from Balsam Lake, and Patty Schachner is a Democrat from Somerset. The election is next Tuesday the 16th. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment for our guests. They're ready to hear from you. So without further ado, I'd like to go to Bernie in Osceola. Bernie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks for staying on the line so long. What's on your mind?
No problem. It's definitely worthwhile cause. I want to ask the candidates. I want to thank candidate Schachner for bringing up the subject of our competition being across the river. I'm a local business person and have a vested interest in this district and would like to see it grow economically. So I guess I would like to pose to the candidates, have them speak to incentives that the state of Wisconsin has to attract business and the associated employees and wages to Wisconsin. I'm aware of something called a manufacturing tax credit, but if there's any others they can speak to, I would certainly love to hear it.
All right, thanks for that. Let's start with Adam Jarko. You've been in the legislature since 2014. What are some of these credits that have been, you know, have been claimed to bring in businesses, and what more should be done?
Well, let me just back up one step here, because I do want to comment on something that Brian said in the earlier question about government getting out of the way, lowering taxes and lowering spending, because he's absolutely right. At the end of the day, what drives business growth and business opportunity largely is a reasonable regulatory environment and a reasonable tax environment. And Brian's right that our tax environment in Wisconsin, we are still too highly taxed. I just saw a report, I think, from the Tax Foundation the other day that had us ranked number 38. Now, that's down a little bit, but I still don't understand why we can't get into, for example, the bottom half. And so my view is we are taxed too high, and in fact that's the reason that I was one of the only Republicans who voted against the state budget last time, is because it increased spending too much for my appetite. And my view is, kind of like Brian said actually, is that when you lower spending, then you can lower tax rates, or vice versa. You lower taxes and there's less money there and spending comes down, and that creates a better jobs environment. But there are also some other things that we can do, and I'm glad that the caller brought up the manufacturing and ag tax credit. I think that's one of the most important things that we've done in Wisconsin in the last few years in order to not only keep our manufacturers, but to grow our manufacturing base. What this credit does, and for some reason, I don't know exactly what the issue is, but for some reason, the Democrats have been very opposed to this credit, and I think they're wrong on this issue. Because it brings our income tax level down for manufacturers to a little less than 0.5%. And so what that does is, if you're across the river in Minnesota and you're paying 8 or 9%, and you can just move your business across the river and start employing people here, or if you're in Illinois and you can move people up and you can start employing people here, it's a fantastic way to not only draw businesses, but remember that most of our small businesses are what are called pass-through businesses. They're sub-S corporations or LLCs. And so it actually entices businesses to move across the river with their owners. And so we saw this in Osceola not too long ago. There's a company that's building a new plant there called Cage. They make really nice snow buckets, and they're building a manufacturing facility in the industrial park. They moved here at least in large part, because of the manufacturing tax credit. But it's also a young owner that moved his family here, and now the kids are in school. That is a fantastic story to tell, and I'm really proud that we fought to keep that manufacturing tax credit, and I really wish the Democrats would take another look at it, because I think this is really good for Wisconsin.
Patty Schachner, your thoughts on the manufacturing tax credits and whether or not there should be more of those types of programs to lure businesses from the powerhouses of, like, the Twin Cities?
Well, again, the tax credits, you need them to have people or businesses come to your industrial parks. I realize that. However, that is not where the issue lies. The issue lies with having a educated and work-ready employees. So I think that as we grow our industrial parks, we need to partner our school districts with the industrial parks to see what it is they need. In District 10, again, our unemployment is really low. So bringing large businesses to an area, or even medium businesses to an area that is not going to be able to meet the needs of the employees, make sense. We need to partner with our current industrial parks, find out what it is they need. Do they need certified welders? Do they need personal care attendants? Do we need nurses' aides to meet the needs of District 10? That's what we need to do. And the only way we can do that and at the same time increase wages to meet that need is with a really strong partnership between our employee-based workforce and our schools. And that includes our high schools, our school districts, our private schools, and then also our technical schools. That there, so when someone loses a job, that they have the ability to be retrained to move something else. As Adam had said, automation is the future. Automation is the future means that we have to have the education so that our people, that young people that are coming out of school, have the basic skills to work in these industries so that they can then be employed, and then the partnership between the technical school and the employers then work to create more trained and skilled staff. I believe that the incentives are great, but I think we need to develop relationships to look at solving problems. And the problem that we have in District 10 is not creating more jobs. It's keeping the people that are here and also getting other employees to work over here. We have a lot. There is not a place you can go around that there is not help wanted signs. We are having a problem of not fulfilling the needs that we have. So we have to really look at what it is we need here in District 10 to meet the needs that we currently have, or we will fall behind. We are not like the other part of the state. District 10 is a subset of the metro area, and we have to start treating ourselves and our employees that way and have those high expectations. So partnerships with education is the key to the success, the economic success of our folks and of our businesses.
Brian Correa, your thoughts on the manufacturing tax credit or other incentives that government give to business to try to attract them to your district?
That's an interesting question when we talk specifically about manufacturing. Why not a hospitality and food services tax credit? Why not a sales industry tax credit? Why are we saying, okay, this industry we're going to give a credit to and this industry we're not? This is a perfect example of the government using its power and its power to tax and handouts favors to say, we're going to choose this industry, this business, and we're going to give them a special advantage over another kind of industry or another kind of business so that they come here and work and open a facility in Wisconsin. So we go back to both parties, again, agree that we should be handing out tax credits. I don't think that the government's role is to pick and choose winners and losers. But I also think we need to set aside a misconception here that people who live in Wisconsin and work in Minnesota, that's not a bad thing. Okay, we talk about workers at and food services and industries where we're having trouble finding employment. Well, if a gentleman, if a family moves here from Minnesota and they're working in the 10th district and their kids live here and go to school here, well, their kids are going to fill roles here in our food service industries and at the lower end of the employment scale, as young people should. And they're going to pay taxes and contribute to the tax base here in the state of Wisconsin. So I don't know that it's a major issue to have people living here and working in Minnesota. They're still contributors to the tax base. So that's a good thing. Yes, we are becoming a suburb of the Twin Cities. There's no question about that. And so exactly, we have to treat ourselves as such. And so if we really want to be competitive and we really want to have families moving out of Minnesota and contributing to the tax base here in Wisconsin, then we need to look at, why would I move from Minnesota to Wisconsin? I'm going to move to Wisconsin because I could pay lower income taxes. I'm going to move to Wisconsin because I pay lower property taxes. I'm going to move to Wisconsin because I have freedom of educational choice here, which is something I would support as opposed to Minnesota. So we have to attract people and make Wisconsin an attractive place for people to grow and raise their families. And we can do that simply by having a friendlier tax status.
With that, let's take our final break. We are running out of hour here on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. I'm joined by three finalists in the race for the 10th State Senate District seat. They are Brian Correa, Libertarian from Wilson, Adam Jarko, Republican from Balsam Lake, and Patty Shackner, Democrat from Somerset. We've got a lot of calls, a lot of questions coming in. Hang tight. We'll get to your question right after our break. This is the West Side, Ideas 88.3 and 88.7. 800-228-5615 is the number to call.
WPR's old-time radio drama is coming to Wausau. Hi, I'm Norman Gilliland. Join me and the 9XM Players for a family-friendly performance of Oscar Wilde's Canterville Ghost at UW Marathon County on February 9th. Experience the golden age of radio with period costumes, sound effects, live music, and more. Find details at WPR.org/ghost.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, indoor water parks and theme parks, dining and entertainment. More information about holiday happenings is at wisdells.com. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world. Support for WPR comes from UW Credit Union, dedicated to providing a variety of investment options paired with financial consultants members can trust. More at uwcu.org. Your best interest always comes first.
Various art classes are being offered at the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls, including hand-built pottery class beginning February 6th and a fused glass pendant class on February 27th. Details online at cvca.net and by phone at 726-9000.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're rounding out the discussion with our finalists in the 10th State Senate District special election. The election happens next Tuesday, January 16th. The candidates are Patty Shackner, she's a Democrat living in Somerset. Adam Jarko is a Republican in Balsam Lake. And Brian Correa is a Libertarian from Wilson. If you've got a question or comment today, 800-228-5615 is the number to call. We're going to just keep on working through the calls right now. I believe it is William in Frederick. William, is that right?
Yes, William up in Frederick.
Hey, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
A couple weeks ago, there was a study that came out that ranked Wisconsin 10th of states that people want to move out of. In other words, nine other states out of the 50 had more people moving out of. Wisconsin was 10th. The basis for that seemed to be jobs and education. And obviously, since 2010, the quote-unquote reforms that we've seen come out of Madison from Governor Walker and the legislative Republicans, they seem to have failed. So I'd like to hear some new and innovative ideas from all three of the candidates on how we can reverse that trend and lower that ranking of 10th of states that people want to move out of or do move out of.
All right, William, thank you so much. Patty Shackner, your thoughts?
Well, it's always sad when you look at Wisconsin and see that we're not the top. But there are things that we can do when you look at education. The first thing is to change and shift the mindset of education. I look at education as an investment in the future. If you treat it as an investment, you groom it, you help it grow, you keep putting a little bit into it, and you know ultimately that the rewards will be fantastic. But if you treat education as an expense, you constantly chip away at it and chip away at it so that you don't have to invest in it. So in my opinion, those relationships are starting to show. I mean, families, especially in our district, there are families that do choose to take their children elsewhere. That would be across the state to private schools in Minnesota. We need to be competitive. We have open enrollment. We have a lot of things going on around here. We don't have voucher schools. So for District 10, we have to invest in our education. And through technology, again, partnering with our industrial parks, partnering with our hospitals, partnering with the labor force that we have, so that we can prepare our kids and give our kids the opportunities and the experiences in education so that if they do choose to go to trade school or college, that they want to come back and live in this community. So The fact that that many people are moving away with because of our education is really bad. I think our education is getting has been villainized for too long. We have some very, very dedicated teachers who are working within the constraints that have been forced upon them. Even though, you know, yes, there was an investment made into education this last budget, and it sounds great, but it's still less than what it was in 2010. And if we want to be competitive, we have to invest in education. And in District 10, excuse me, our choices are the public schools with a few private schools. But overall, our investment needs to be in our education system, K through 12, technical colleges, and the university system.
Thank you for that. Adam Jarko, your thoughts on, you know, things that the state can do to try to keep people from leaving to go to other places, like, say, live in Wisconsin and work in Twin Cities Metro, which would have generally have higher income?
Well, a couple things. First, let's be clear, Wisconsin, even on the study that William points out, the population in Wisconsin is growing, albeit somewhat slowly, about 0.5% per year, but where we are growing is in St. Croix County and Southern Polk County and Pierce County. Mm-hmm. The 10th Senate District is one of the fastest growing regions in Wisconsin. So I think it's simply inaccurate to say that, you know, people are leaving the 10th Senate District or St. Croix County to go see other opportunities somewhere else. And so just the opposite is true. It's one of the fastest growing regions in the state. One of the reasons why people, if you look at the study in the states that are having outward migration, it is, generally speaking, the states in the Midwest and the Northeast. And the reason, frankly, is two. One, it was 20 below zero for 2 weeks on end, and people, to some extent, as they retire, move away from that. But the second, and we can't control the weather, of course, but what we can control is our tax rate. And our tax rate drives a lot of people to move to places like Florida, Texas, South Dakota. It's funny that if you look at one of the inward migration states, why would it be South Dakota? Why would South Dakota be one of the higher inward migration states? It's because of its tax burden, being a no-tax state, low-tax state. Wisconsin is just the opposite. And so if we want to keep our retirees here, and we absolutely should want to keep them here, because they are fantastic for our economy and our tax base, we need to seriously look at our tax burden and bring that tax burden down in a meaningful way. And I think when you start seeing that, not only will jobs and job opportunities boom across Wisconsin, which will keep young people here and draw young people back, but it will keep retirees from moving away to low-tax states like Texas, South Dakota, and Florida.
Brian Correa, what do you think the secret sauce is in terms of keeping people from leaving the state or attracting them? I mean, is it spending in education, you know, the promise of a good education here in Wisconsin, or taxes, or something else that we haven't mentioned yet?
It's a little of both and something else, I think. As a father, I can tell you that when I moved, and I think most parents would agree that when we move, we're looking for where can I go where there are good schools. That's an absolute. So when we look at people making that decision, so we look at education and we talk about investing in the public school system, I support a fully vouchered system because I think that there are limitations to what the public education system is able to do. We've been talking about a lot of things when it comes to public education for a long, long time, smaller classroom sizes, more innovation, things of that nature. And we haven't been able to get that done in the confines of what is essentially a government monopoly running the schools. So by freeing up the market with vouchers, you're not only going to create a great deal of opportunity as businesses move into the area intent on education. You look at the Sylvan Learning Centers, Code Ninjas, Mathnasiums. Let's get those things into the district and let them participate in the educational process here. We're really talking about sharing some of the burden and taking some of the burden off of our public education system so that we're creating educational opportunities that exist outside of that confined public education system. We also talk a lot about lowering taxes as a way to get people to come into the state, but we can't lower taxes unless we are going to be very serious about reducing the size and scope of government and reducing the things that government is doing. So we have to provide an environment where health insurance is affordable and we do that by, again, reducing regulations, reducing restrictions, and allowing people to shop for health insurance in a free market environment. That creates jobs. That frees up money in the economy. So, yeah, we could talk about lowering taxes. We can talk about investing in education, and all those things are critical. But we're not going to get any of those things done unless we can shrink the size and scope of what the government and the state is doing and start actually reducing the size. I don't want to be voting for smaller increases in the budget. I want to be voting for decreases in the amount of money that we're spending, because if we're not doing that, then there's no way to reduce taxation.
Back to the phones we go, and Margo in Osceola, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, a senior friend of mine saw a Facebook ad about Adam wanting to repeal Obamacare. I don't know, to me that sounds like an ad to scare seniors. I guess my question is for Patty and Adam. So the Wisconsin Senate doesn't have anything to do with repealing Obamacare, right? That's a federal issue. And that can only be changed or repealed by the U.S. Congress. Isn't that right? And thank you.
Thank you for that. Patty Schachner, I'll go to you. Are you familiar with this advertisement?
No, I've seen some of it, yes. So the question is, you know, we didn't accept the Medicaid expansion, and we have Badger Care in Wisconsin. And we have a lot of people who depend on Badger Care. It should really be, in my opinion, expanded. But the problem with District 10 is if you are on Badger Care and you need to go across the river, there is not the contracts and the negotiations haven't been signed so that you can have the same choices that other people. So to me, expanding on the health care is the key. Now, I do believe that competition is good, and I think that we should be the state. Those of us that are on the border, it only makes sense to grow our state insurance. You know, Badger Care, technically, I would guess, is part of the Obamacare thing exchange, but we didn't accept the Medicaid exchange, so we are kind of an island, and we need to really look at our Badger Care and make sure that all of our citizens, seniors, kids, families, everybody have the same opportunities to health care. You know, when it comes to choices in health care, there's a lot of argument that, well, if I don't want to have annual physicals, then I shouldn't have to pay for that in my health care. Well, years ago, they had insurance that you could pick and choose what you want, which was just cancer insurance. And then you had a heart attack, and you weren't covered. We have to be careful when we say we're just going to have our young people have these choices of just very minimal coverage, because in my experience working in healthcare, those are the ones that have the most impactful unintentional consequences. They do the right thing by getting insurance, but they don't get the right coverage. We just need to cover everybody. That's how I feel.
All right, Brian Correa, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, just real quick. First, it's not necessarily that you're going to buy cancer insurance, okay? And it's not necessarily that you're not going to be getting your annual checkups and things of that nature. What I'll tell you is that we have to look at what having a third party payer involved in the health industry, what that does, okay? There was a time when this whole employee-based healthcare system and all this was created a long time ago, and it's kind of what's gotten us into this healthcare situation that we're in right now. But when we talk about having major medical coverage, we're talking about, I don't want my health insurance. I'll go pay out of pocket for my own physicals. I'll pay out of pocket for my own preventive care. And if I have something serious go wrong, anything over this dollar threshold, for example, is going to be covered by my insurance. That's how major medical works. I think a lot of people know that. The other side of it is, I don't believe in passing legislation because I'm worried that somebody else is going to make a bad decision. That's not the role of government to say, well, we're going to pass this law because if we don't, somebody out there might make a poor decision. If we're going to live as free people, then we have to have the ability to make these decisions for ourselves. And I don't think we can trust a government that doesn't trust us.
And Adam Jarko, I wanted to get your take on this Facebook ad, and also, you know, the Obama Care or the Affordable Care Act issue. Do you think it should be repealed?
Well, first and foremost, I've seen the ad, or ads, I guess, that the other side is running, and they're absurd, and they're meant to scare seniors. I mean, they say things like, you know, he supports the repeal of the ACA, and, you know, be scared. And it's absurd, of course, as the caller pointed out. This can only be repealed by Congress. The state Senate has nothing to do with it, and I think it shows a little bit of desperation to be...
They can't advocate, though.
What's that?
Lawmakers in the states could advocate for it to be repealed.
Sure, but so could regular citizens. And,
sure.
And I will tell you, Obamacare has been a massive failure, and it's been a particular failure in the 10th Senate District. If you look at what is going on with premiums with our small businesses, I talk to these folks regularly, and they are beside themselves. They're having the worst time trying to provide health insurance for their employees. And these are employers that have been providing health insurance for their employers for decades. And now, because of Obamacare, it is causing a serious, serious problem with these small businesses to provide health insurance for their employees. And you know, it is somewhat unfair, I think, to characterize where we are on the Medicaid expansion to simply say, well, we didn't take the expansion. No, what we did was create our own model in Wisconsin that covers everyone under the poverty level. And so, you know, instead of just taking the one-size-fits-all from Washington Obamacare, what we did in Wisconsin was design something that was innovative to take care of those who are most in need. But at the end of the day, what we have to do is get back to a market-driven approach that will lower rates, lower premiums, insure those people for the things they need to be insured for, and not have this one-size-fits-all approach from D.C. It always amuses me that my friends on the left purport to be in favor of local control. But boy, oh boy, when it comes to Obamacare, they sure are fans of Washington, D.C. controlling one-sixth of the economy.
Let me just step into this.
Very quickly, we've got 30 seconds.
Okay, my husband just recently had a heart procedure. It cost us $10,000 with insurance. To say that health care does not affect every household in District 10 is not a liberal or conservative thing. It is a reality. Health care is the next big issue, and it affects seniors, kids, everybody. And not everybody can afford to pay that. And we have to make sure that our folks have health care, because it is costing everybody.
Patty
and
Schefter,
to say that it's not is irresponsible.
I need to cut it there. Thank you all for your discussion. Our guests this hour were the finalists running for the 10th State Senate District. Patty Schefter is a Democrat from Somerset. Adam Jarko is a Republican from Balsam Lake. Brian Correa is a Libertarian from Wilson. Thank you all so much. Also, thanks to Team West Side, including Henry Lippold, Mort Cypress, Dean Kallenbeck, Kate Spranger, Rebecca Hinterleiter, and of course our engineers. We'll be off next week. We'll be back January 22nd. Reminder, Election Day for the 10th State Senate District is Tuesday, January 16th. Thanks for listening. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again.